His name is Mel. Mel and Vic try to act as the moderators of something called the Technical Mat. By now, you guys know what the Technical Mat does. I won't even bother telling you that. A person signs into the Technical Mat by giving Mel and Vic your call letters, your name, the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would be sounding like this, K-E-2-E-J, Eric, and yes. So do we have some check-ins? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
November to X-ray, Juliet November. Wesley, yes.
Okay, I got Wesley. And who was the other person?
K2GJE, Ed, yes. W2ILP, yes.
Okay, so far we've got Wesley, Ed, and Bob. Anyone else?
WA2, Victor, David, Henry, John, yes. Evening all, K2KEY.
And WS2N with a quick space report. Good evening, Jeff.
Very fine. We got John and Paul and Mel. So far, Wesley, Ed, Bob, John, Paul, and Mel. Do we skip anyone? Give me your call letter's name and the word yes at this time. Okay, I think it's more than enough to get started. And, hopefully most of you guys heard a little bit about the nice gathering that took place this afternoon, or this morning, the flea market at Levittown Hall. I was told that there was a very distinguished design, here we go, a person with a very distinguished dress was there today. He's going to give us a few words right now. Go ahead, Wesley, N2XJN, K2RIW. What was the flea market like for you? Was it good for you? You got it, Wesley.
And to examine, well, it was good. I appreciate the work of 300 people that are within this organization, and I do believe that they contribute a lot to the most active repeater and the club in the region. The second, I had a privilege, and I would like to express my great appreciation to talk to the president of that club. Very nice salon. I would say gentleman. And he behaves like a gentleman. So that's for the beginning. I didn't have a chance to meet you, but I think I'm going to do it next time. Let me jump. Okay. I was told how the operation is being made and how much work it involves and how much it costs. And I believe that many people should consider contributing to that particular repeater as they have a use of that repeater. And that's my comment in this matter. Okay, now, a few things. I'm in the possession of the plans and schematic how to make a car, your car, working entirely on water without electrolyte. Anybody is interested, would you please email me? You can find my email address on curious.com. If you have any questions, I'm ready to answer that. The second, it was found by the number of universities, Princeton University, the German University, the names I have in front of me, secondary that, and Australian one, that there is a distinguished violation of the understanding of the laws of thermodynamics. And these laws of thermodynamics in the certain situation appear to be untrue. And let me jump for a moment. From that, what is untrue is simply, I'm not going to go to the details. Correlation of zero law of thermodynamic in a system with negative specific heat. Then black holes violate the second law of thermodynamics. Big Bang could not possibly be correct because it violates the first law of thermodynamics. And obviously you cannot have energy from nothing. Then the entropy by itself is being put in question as being understood. So basically that's all that I have to say. If anybody is interested, I'm going to explain some more. Now, as far as other things, I put to your attention Marco Brodin. I am putting him along with many people and scientists and universities at the same level as Nikola Tesla and Albert Einstein. So the guy actually made the mathematics that is easy to understand for 9 years old child, based on which he found elegant resonance between architecture and geometry. Based on that, two things were happened. One of them was the Rodin coil with very, very interesting characteristics. Concentrating electromagnetic pull in a very, very great power inside that coil. The coil looks like a donut from Dunkin' Donuts, but doesn't have a core from any ferrite. You may use plastic, or you may afterwards remove that and just leave the coiling. Now, some of the people claim to be able to create monopole magnet. Monopole magnet is only the one that has either north, either south. Now, if it's true, I don't know. For that part, I don't know, but the rest of it, I know. Now, there is a very interesting schematic for the receiver and the transmitter based on Marco Rodin coil. Anybody wants to have more information, please email me. I will give it to you. Thank you very much. Dick, back to you, Anthony J.
Now, for those who maybe haven't listened to some of the conversations that Wesley, I, and Glenn, and a few others have had over the last few weeks, Wesley has been doing a significant amount of research on procedures, techniques, hardware, and whatever that appears to violate a number of the conventional laws of thermodynamics and conservation of energy and whatever. And so he has collected a significant number of websites which give demonstration of these apparent exceptions and with these apparent very desirable characteristics. I'm looking at the N2XJN entry right now at QRZ.com. I'm looking for your email address there, Wesley, and I don't think I see it. No, I do not. So, for those who would like to have a list of these websites that Wesley has...
You have to log in to see it.
Say it again?
You have to log in to QIZ to see it.
Okay. So if I log in, I guess you're saying that it will show it to me, which is something I don't conventionally do. Glad to know that. So for those who want this list of websites that Wesley has discovered, looks like if you do send a... the electronic equivalent of a self-addressed stamped envelope these days, which really means give him your email address. He'll give you that list. And from that, we can continue the research, the conversations, and so on. I can tell by the emails that Mel and I get that this is a subject of interest to some, but not all. There's a little bit of a controversy as to whether or not this is a normal ham radio subject, and therefore my usual way of wording this is that we're going to take it in chunks, in pieces, and we're certainly not going to get the answer to it all in any one website, TechNet meeting of the minds. It's a reasonably deep subject. To my knowledge, there is something to be learned in the process of studying each one of these. Let me drop this. Procedures. Let's see, is there a beep tonight, Eric? Or did I just miss it? explanation. And we will be going into that one of these days, but I think it's a partial explanation of what is taking place. One other thing I want to mention to everyone, in order to change things a little bit, know that at, I've got a conflict now as to whether or not it should be 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, but at some very specific time, I think we really should stop temporarily and answer at least one or two of the mailbag entries and then go back to normal TechNet operation. In the past, we wait until we go through each one of the people who sign in their questions and comments. Quite often, we run out of time. It's brought to my attention that a significant number of people who are listening to the TechNet, deciding to get into ham radio, but don't yet have a license, don't have a voice yet on this particular TechNet. Their only way of getting through, so to speak, is by way of emailing questions. In the past, I've been saying that, hey, that's not what we promised to do. Well, there's more value to that than I've suddenly realized. And so let's make it, I'm going to make a declaration that at 10 o'clock, we're going to stop temporarily, go to the mailbag to make sure that we don't skip it tonight, and then we'll go back to normal questions and answers. So I thank you for that submittal, Wesley.
Now, just one more thing.
Go ahead, Wesley.
When I was researching all of the available information in regards to free energy and opportunity that will in the effect of allow, if it's true, to actually cut off from the heat, electricity, from the electricity, gas supply, and the gas for your car, I was not having one simple answer. Because everything was coming to the point of thermodynamics and the laws of thermodynamics. If it appears that laws of thermodynamics do not work all the time, then I believe we may start to believe that these energy sources are real. Thank you very much.
Looks like it's gonna take a while to get to the bottom of this one. And the Big Bang and other exceptions to the normal rules are some pretty good examples. There may be more. Stay tuned. The next person who signed in with a question or a comment was Ed, K2 Golf Juliet Echo. If I got it right, Ed, go right ahead with your question. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
You got it right. K2RIW, K2GKE. Just interested in a comparison between using a ground plane antenna and a J-pole antenna, like on 2 meters. I'm using a ground plane at this time. I was interested in possibly building a J-pole. Any advantage, disadvantage? Back to Ned.
Yeah, I'm a person with a pretty strong opinion on this one, Ed. Again, I don't guarantee it's the whole answer. When a person talks about ground plane, they usually mean quarter wave ground plane. It's a quarter wave radiator and a number of ground plane radials, the so-called counterpoise on that antenna. And let me backtrack and tell you how almost every simple antenna works. From my recent way of thinking, every basic antenna is a dipole. Many of the antennas we use look like a monopole. They look like a PIFA, printed inverted F antenna, PIFA. They look like the quarter wave ground plane. If you took a real dipole antenna and try to analyze it, and you decide to wait until the sine wave of radio frequency energy you're putting to it has gone to a peak, and you stop time and you figure out what's going on, you could say the right-hand side of the dipole is positive, the left-hand side of the dipole is negative, and voltage-wise is a very low voltage, almost zero at the center. Half wave later, the voltages will be reversed, but the magnitudes and the concept will be pretty much the same. The bottom line of all that is that there is a neutral plane in the center of a dipole. I could put a sheet of metal perpendicular to the dipole itself, right down the center, changing anything. Let me drop. And once I put that sheet of dipole, or sheet of metal there, I could decide to use the right-hand side, the right-hand half of the dipole, and discard the left-hand side. And with that infinite sheet of metal, I'd have a well-designed quarter-wave ground plane antenna. Rotate a little bit so that it's vertical, if you like vertical polarization. Another way of looking at a dipole is to realize that there's nothing magic about feeding the center of a dipole. And there's nothing magic about the dipole being symmetrical. I could make the right-hand side bigger than the left-hand side. I could make the right-hand side longer than the left-hand side. In other words, I don't have to feed it in the center. I can feed it a little bit off the center. I could feed it way off to one side if I wanted to. And so the thing that looks like a rubber duck antenna, the other half of that dipole is really the metal package that's in your hand of the rest of the handy-talkie, and so on. There's nothing magic about symmetry, nothing magic about feeding it in the center. If you have a balancing device of sufficient performance, when you decide to feed the antenna all the way over to one end, it's a half-wave dipole, and you decide to feed the outer tip of the dipole, that really is a J-pole antenna. A J-pole antenna, the radiator itself, is electronically a half-wave. Let me drop. And one of the things that Mel and I have been saying for some time, I've been saying it a little bit stronger, is that when you're setting up a vertical antenna, a vertical ground plane in the backyard, with the radiator a quarter-wave long, the only way that the antenna gives you full performance is if you try to create that sheet of metal and make it look like it is an infinite sheet of metal, an extremely large number of radials, so that the distance between each of the radials is so small that the RF energy thinks that at that wavelength, that's a solid sheet of metal. It's a pretty enthusiastic undertaking to really make a full performance quarter wave ground plane antenna. Now, do you really need full performance is another interesting question. If you have a smaller number of radials and a certain amount, let me drop, a certain amount of your RF energy is being coupled into the Earth and the rest of it left over radiated. Earth is to an antenna a somewhat lossy volumetric material, and you'd like to shield the antenna away from that. If you made the vertical dipole half wave long instead of quarter wave long, the feed impedance, instead of being something like 30 ohms, goes to something like 1,500 ohms. When you feed the outer edge of a dipole, because you're feeding such an extremely high impedance, something like 1,500 ohms, the need for the ground plane radials and the integrity of the ground plane radial system goes down entirely, becomes extremely easy, so to speak. And the center of radiation of the antenna is higher. If you do decide to hang a pure vertical wire-type half-wave dipole, assuming you've got a support that's long enough to do that, you have the choice, if you want to, of bringing a feed line into it at right angles at the center. That would be the conventional half-wave dipole fed in a vertically polarized antenna. And that requires some resources that's a lot more difficult to encounter. There's nothing magic about feeding it in the center. Feeding it at the bottom is a perfectly logical thing to do. A J-pole antenna does do that. That silly little looking mechanism you've got at the bottom of a J-pole is an impedance step-up device, and the actual radiator is a half wave. The bottom line of all that is, from my point of view, a J-pole will give more performance than a quarter-wave ground plane. It is easier to implement, as long as you have the resources of making the radiator a half wave long instead of a quarter wave long. Let me drop. And your center of radiation is higher up. I'm going to pass it over to Mel, because I'll bet you some of his guys at the Kings County Radio Club, and he himself, might quite possibly have done a side-by-side comparison, maybe not at the exact same day and hour, but over the years of all the antennas you have experimented with, Mel, I'm going to make a guess that you built something like a J-pole antenna on any one of these bands. 2 meters is where you're going to really get some performance. It's easier to do. But I'll bet you compare the J-pole to a quarter-wave ground plane. I wonder if you've got some feeling on this one. K2KEY, K2RIW, you got to know.
Okay, good evening again. This is K2KEY. Well, I'll tell you, a J-pole, as Dick just, when it comes to being a excellent 2-meter antenna that looks and hold together properly, because it says that, you know, when he put it together, showed him how to put it together, a number of people at the club, they made a statement that this is one of the few antennas that that they put up that holds together. Let me let it drop and I'll say a few more words. So, as far as the J-pole goes, the simplicity of the antenna to put it together is evident that, you know, you don't really need a lot of fancy materials. And if you go ahead and compare the performance of a J-pole versus a quarter-wave ground plane, you will find that if you use especially rigid copper tubing, that you will have one heck of an antenna. What else can I say about it? In performance, the measurement of a quarter-wave ground plane versus a J-pole, the J-pole was an excellent performer, and I think I could honestly say it performed as well as that famous Ringo Ranger, Dick, over.
Glad to hear all that, Mel. Sounds like he likes it. Half-wave radiator versus a quarter-wave radiator, I think it's also going to give you a little bit more narrow beamwidth aimed at the horizon. I think the gain increase you're going to get when you go from quarter-wave ground plane to half-wave radiator, J-pole-like antenna, there's going to be a gain increase. We could argue about whether or not it's 1.5, 2.5 dB or whatever. It's not going to be a huge number, but it's worth fighting for. There's another thing going on here, too, you should realize, Ed, and that is we amateurs really shine when it comes to antenna experimentation. In most cases, the raw materials required to build an antenna are not extremely expensive. And if you don't do a good job with the antenna, you're not wasting a whole lot of money, it doesn't explode, it doesn't catch you on fire, and we amateurs can't have enough antennas. No matter how many we got, we can use a few more. Using them sequentially, in other words, doing a... Let me drop... test is a good thing to do. Also, using the antennas in combinations where you feed two of them at once, in phase, out of phase, electronically change the pattern. Another very worthwhile experiment. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Obviously, I'm going to say go and do it as far as building the J-pole is concerned. Let me pass it over to the group one more time. Is there anyone else besides Mel and Dick who have had any experience with a J-pole versus quarter-wave ground plane experiment, whether you did it on 10 meters, 20 meters, 6 meters, 2 meters, 432, whatever. If you've got any experience along those lines, please give us a call. Your call letters right now. K2LIW.
Say one more word. I forgot.
Okay, I'm going to pass it over to Mel first, but let me first find out, is there anyone else who would like to tell us their personal experience with the comparison of those two antennas? Please give me your call letters and name right now. Okay, maybe there's no one else. Mel, go right ahead with your further information.
Okay, another thing I liked about J-pole is very easy to feed. I forgot to mention that. All it takes is a few turns. I think maybe it was around 3 turns of coax cable, and you can feed it directly through the 3 turns, and that's it. And it doesn't take any fancy balloting. And I also found that if it's mounted approximately about 10 feet up, and a number of the hands I know that built them, mounted them just strictly on like a 10-foot length of TV mast, found that it worked excellent. And you can also adjust it very easy because there's 2 clamps that you put on there. The clamp can easily be loosened and adjusted, so it is a very flexible antenna, to say the least, Dick. Very easy to build and very easy to tune, and you'll find it will perform excellent. Go ahead.
Hey, Dick. Hey, go right ahead, Eric. Thank you so much. comment on what Eric, what Mel just said. But Eric, go right ahead and tell us what you want us to know.
Just a suggestion. You have a bunch of echolink users. You need to take at some point a 10 or 15 second pause and give them the opportunity to get in.
Okay. Right after I make this comment, I'm going to give that nice long pause and we'll find out if anyone else wants to get in. When you do an email search, a web search, a Google search on the word J-Pol antenna, you'll end up with an extremely nice article that once you read it, you'll understand it, and it gives you a J-Pol-like antenna, a vertical radiator, with an automatic built-in impedance matching device. And unfortunately, the particular article, when you find it, there's two articles grouped together by, I think it's an Italian group, and the two articles, the first one is called Delta Loop, and the second one is called Vertical-Vertical. I'm going to try to give you the website address for this one. But I found it by doing the word J-Pol search with Google, and I'm not sure if it was the first thing. The particular article itself, unfortunately, it's got a slightly long email address, but I'll give you the beginning of the address, and I think it'll help you find it. And that is www.dxzone.com/CGI. That's Charlie Golf India dash BIN/DIR/JUMP with uppercase on the J, JUMP numeral 2 dot CGI, Charlie Golf India, ? India Delta, uppercase on both of those, equals 5221. I'll admit it's a very long email address. You go there, and you're going to get this double article, one called Delta Loop, one called Vertical, Vertical. And the article describes a way of getting an extremely classy impedance match for a J-Pol-like antenna by using a very simple stub. In other words, a T connector with a length of cable going off to one side as a method of feeding this antenna. And I studied this thing a few months ago, very nicely written article, and it's an extremely classy way of making an antenna on any frequency, a vertically polarized 80 meter dipole fed in this manner would be an extremely classy antenna as long as you've got a support high enough.
Repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
As long as you've got a support high enough, or even a slanted support high enough to hold that particular antenna. So, let me pass it over to Ed first for his final comments on the subject. Then I'm going to give a nice long delay to see if anyone else wants to sign in, as Eric was just telling us. So, Ed, for a whole bunch of reasons, as you can say, I strongly recommend you go and do it. I think you're going to enjoy it. K2 Golf, Juliet, India, who gave us this particular question. K2RIW in the second end. You've got it, Ed.
See, one more question, one more remark there.
Okay, let me pick up Ed first, then we're going to go over to Mel's remark. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay, thank you. I'm convinced. It's Kilo 2 Golf Juliet Echo, K2GJE. I'm convinced. I think that's going to be the next project here. This ground plane has a 5/4 wave vertical. I always like to put a little extra wire out there, and it seems to work quite well. But I think now the next project I want to try on 2 meters is a J-Pol. I'll turn it back to Ned, and thank you, and I'll just have my ears on from now on. Thank you all.
Very fine, Ed. And Ed, after you do that experiment of building the J-Pol antenna, whether you like it or don't like it, whether it works well or doesn't work well, please come back and let us know what you found, because you're not alone. There's going to be other people who want to know more about the relative advantages. There's only 5,000 kinds of antennas. If you don't believe it, you get the latest issue of Antenna Engineering Handbook by Volasic. So it's an expensive book, but hopefully a good technical library has got it. That's the 4th edition. Read any of the editions, 1 through 4. engineering handbook. Just page through there, look at the pictures, and you realize there's an extremely large number of antenna types. And when you then walk through your hardware store, either locally or in a rural area, and you look at the stuff that's available, guarantee you'll get ideas saying that, gee, if I combine this with that, I can make that kind of antenna, and it's not going to cost a whole lot of money. That's one of the most fun projects you can do. Okay, Mel's going to give us some more comments. K2KEY, wait for the beep. K2RIW.
Go into, you look in the antenna manual they've got in the plumbing department of pieces of pipe that are cut off, you know, different length of sort of scrap pieces of pipe, which will be easily fit for a few bucks. Will easily fit the J-pole, but it's all in the manual, step by step. They're a very, very, very good diagram of how to put it together. Anybody can put it together. All you need is go into, like I say, Home Depot, pick up the materials, come home, take your propane torch out, and put it together. I think you can most likely knock it off in about an hour, within an hour, 1 hour, Dick. So, all copper, and it'll last forever outside. Okay, that's it. Go ahead with the next. This is K2KEY.
And that manual that Mel was talking about is most likely the ARRL Antenna Handbook, or ARRL Antenna Book, another extremely good reference. When you go to a real good antenna testing laboratory or antenna development laboratory, as long as the engineers there are not hiding it for some silly reason, you'll find sitting on their shelf the ARRL Antenna Book, the JASIC Antenna Engineering Handbook, and the Radio Amateurs Handbook. All of the real good laboratories, somewhere on one of those engineers' shelf, those books are there. If you don't have a copy of each one of those, or if it's not available to you at your library, try to do something about it. You page through those books, and you're going to say, wow, does that give me ideas? The price is right, the language is good, and you'll really enjoy it. Now, at Eric's suggestion, we're going to give a nice long delay. If anyone out of area wants to sign in, give me your call letters, name, and if you do have a question or a comment, follow it by the word yes, and do that at this time. That way we know to put you on the list for people who do have a question or a comment. And to repeat one more time, at 10 o'clock we're going to take a little bit of an interruption to go to our mailbag. So people out of area with IRLP or EchoLink or whatever, you want to sign it, we're going to give a long enough delay at this time. K2RIW, TechNet, Lima, New York, we're listening.
N2MB, and I have a comment.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I heard that Barry, N2MB, and I heard another person who said yes, yes. We're going to ask you for a repeat because for some reason we didn't hear your...
That's because people didn't drop long enough. There's got to be just a minimum of 10 seconds of dead air. No carriers, no repeaters on the air.
Okay, we're going to give 10 seconds of dead air, and the person who said yes, yes, please repeat your call letters, sir. K2RIW on the TechNet in Limehawk, New York. We're listening.
When I get stepped up, assume you don't hear me from the internet. Yes, W-H-O-O-Y, Joe.
Okay, very fine. We picked up Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y, that night, that time, through the internet. So Barry wants to give us a comment, and then Joe in that area. Barry, N2MB, but you built some of these antennas, and you're going to take that beautiful structure in your backyard and put some pretty fancy HF antennas, steerable antennas on it pretty soon. I know you've been threatening to do that, and we're looking forward to that report when it does happen. N2, moonbound. Wait for the beep, and a little bit longer, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, Barry.
Okay, real good. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that if you just go to Google and type Delta Loop, nothing else, it will actually bring you, the first thing on the list will be DX Zone, and when you go into it, you're going to see on the right-hand side of the page every antenna you could possibly think of, including
putting the J-pole in a delta loop and what band you want it on, it all comes up, and it's a pretty easy way to get to it. And, yeah, my antenna projects are under the snow right now. I've got them laying all over the backyard. I was moving along with it beautifully, and then we've had nothing but a snow cover in my backyard, so I guess I'm going to have to wait another couple of weeks until I could see the coax laying on the ground. Back over to Net Control and 2MD.
Very fine, Barry. So when that project goes back online, when the weatherman cooperates, looks like we've got something to look forward to. Sounds like fun. And Joe, let's see, we haven't heard from you for a while. W-H-U-R-Y-Y. What's the latest in your neighborhood? Well, wait a minute now. I'm putting you on the list. Yeah, let's pick up Joe right now. Go right ahead, Joe. W-H-U-R-Y-Y. What would you like to tell us? K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Because I checked in last week and you just plumb forgot me. That's what you did.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to get to you right after Joe, not to worry. Joe, sorry about that last week. That's the first mistake I've ever made, and I'll try to avoid it. Go right ahead, Joe. What would you like to tell us? W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the group.
That's okay. I'm sure your pencil has plenty of erasing left on it, Dick. Yeah, here's something I've been wondering for a while. It's probably a very simple answer to the question. On a mobile antenna, which has a nominal impedance of 50 ohms, is I guess you could theoretically, the word is, call it a Marconi type of antenna, because it's radiating through use of a ground plane on a metal roof. Now, a Marconi antenna, I believe, is a 35 ohm impedance, if I'm not correct, if I'm not mistaken. So how do they get the 50 ohms out of it? Does the length actually change slightly to make the thing a 50 ohm impedance antenna?
Okay. You're into a slightly controversial area, and I've got a bunch of opinions on this one, Joe. Depending on how big is the diameter of your antenna, whether or not it's tapered, how long it is, what is the counterpoise, in the case of an automobile, the automobile itself, when you're operating on 80 meters, is nowhere near big enough to be a good counterpoise. Whether or not your automobile is driving over dry soil or a wet swampland, lots and lots of things can change the true impedance of an antenna. How you feed it, how far from the center or away from the center, electronically how long the antenna is a zillion things that can change the apparent impedance and the reactive component of an antenna. Academically, you could say that a so-and-so antenna has got this number of ohms of resistance and that number of ohms of reactance. And if you're a real good scientist and you've got a good vector network analyzer, you can analyze it from that point of view if you want to. Another approach is to say, I'm smart enough to set up impedance matching devices, whether you call it a matchbox, an antenna tuner, or whatever, or the equivalent, or if your transmitter has a real tuning and loading control in the final stage. The final impedance of the antenna almost doesn't matter as long as you create the right kind of an impedance match between that antenna and your transmitting device, your final stage of your tube, your final stage of your transmitter, and as long as the total network of the radiating system, antenna, feed line, impedance matching device, transmitter, whatever, that whole combination, if you force it into electronic resonance at that frequency, let me drop. You force it into electronic resonance at that frequency and impedance match it, then 99% of the energy you're transmitting is going to be sent out into space. Now, I will admit that the one thing you don't have control over is what is the soil like under that car as you drive it along to this mobile antenna. And if a certain amount of that RF energy is going to be coupled into that local soil and give you some loss, and you get a couple of dB of loss because of that, it's not a showstopper. You can talk about an antenna being 50% efficient or 100% efficient, and to a logical person, it sounds like a huge difference. You would say that, hey, the 50% antenna, efficient antenna with half the power being wasted, no one's ever going to hear me. You can easily say that, and you think it's the truth. In reality, a 50% efficient antenna would only be 3 decibels down on a perfectly calibrated signal strength meter that the guy is using on the other end, the guy that's listening to you. I mean, whether or not you and I get through is whether or not the guy on the other end gets an S2 or an S9, so to speak. Mother Nature's got a big change on that, whether or not you're cross-polarized. So there's a whole lot of other variables involved. So the exact impedance of antenna X versus antenna Y, I think, is getting a little more academic than you really care about, because nowadays we've got so many the impedance matching devices we have, the antenna tuners and things like that. If they've got enough range to it, you force it into resonance, you force it into the right impedance match, the transmitter is happy, the majority of the energy is going in the right direction to that antenna and ultimately radiated. One of the things that we've had quite a few discussions on over the years on the TechNet is what happens to the reflected energy when you're using a matchbox. And the bottom line of all that is that I'm 98% convinced that that matchbox properly used will re-reflect that energy forward again in phase with the power coming out of your transmitter, and it ultimately gets radiated, assuming your feed line is low enough in loss. The fact that the energy is bouncing back and forth almost doesn't matter. So, as you can see, that's my way of looking at it. I'll admit it's not the only way, Joe. And if you make the leap of faith and assume that your antenna tuning structure has enough range to it and it doesn't run out of range, if each of the tuning and loading controls on your antenna tuner do not run out of range and the transmitter is happy, the exact impedance of the antenna, I think, is not so important. W-H-U-R-Y-Y. K-2-R-I.
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Okay, well, I was thinking of something a little more simplistically, like using an antenna on 144 megahertz or 445 megahertz. You know, typically what we both probably have done. 2-meter antenna or 440 antenna. I don't use a matchbox in my car. It's connected to my mobile radio, and what I get is what I get. So that's why I was asking the question. It apparently matches the radio very well. It apparently works fairly well. I'm coming in at UHF right now, but it was just sort of a curiosity question more than anything else.
What I think you're going to discover, Joe, is that many a 2-meter antenna, if you just go and feed it on 440, impedance-wise, particularly if you've got some kind of an antenna tuner, will quite often please you. And modern-day rigs are quite forgiving, particularly VHF, UHF rigs are extremely forgiving. If you did put a significant mismatch in there, they've got enough self-protection, enough excess dissipation in that final stage, that 90-some-odd percent of the time, nothing bad happens. The only other thing you've got to be concerned about a little bit is if I took a particular antenna that was designed for 2 meters, and I decide to go feed it on 440, let me drop. I decide to go feed it on 440. The pattern that I get on 440, the vertical elevation pattern, there's a slim chance that might not be desirable. And there's ways you can model that, there's ways you can study it. I mean, if I had a 5/8 wave antenna on 2 meters, for instance, and I set it on 440, which means it's going to be 5/8 times 3, let's see, that's a 15/8 wave, that particular antenna, what would the vertical elevation pattern be like? Is there a null on the horizon? I should concern myself with that a little bit. But even if you don't want to do a thorough study ahead of time, you just go and try it. It could be an darn interesting experiment. So, and there's ways you can do an evaluation. You know, have an ordinary mag mount antenna on the car and do an Alpha Bravo test, an A-B test, and listen to repeaters, have people report on what the signal sounds like to you. You can eventually find out what's going on. Antennas are a beautiful way to do experimenting. In the old days when Mel and I cut our teeth in ham radio, a high percentage of the real ham radio operators would build their own transmitter and build their own receiver. We don't do that these days, at least not on HF and most of the VHF frequencies. I mean, with a week's salary, you can buy a piece of equipment that would take you a year and a half to build. You're way ahead of the game to just buy that. But when it comes to antennas, my goodness, can we do a lot of experimenting, and it's where a lot of good information can be derived, and it doesn't cost a lot. So go to it, Joe. And on top of that, when you do get a chance to run this comparison of 2 meters versus 445 megacycles on the particular antenna you're contending with right now. Please come back and let us know. Good news, bad news, whatever. Back to you for any final comments on this, Joe. WHURYY, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, WHURYY. I haven't really thought of experimenting with it, but I have known people have done it. They've taken a quarter-wave antenna that's fairly resonant on the amateur 2-meter band, and they've used it on UHF. And apparently it has gain on UHF because it becomes theoretically a three-quarter-wave antenna, so it has a little bit of flattening effect and it supposedly has some gain. I don't know what you'd actually call it, consider how much gain it has over the yearly gain of a quarter-wave on UHF. I guess it's a couple of dB, but 3 or 4 dB, something like that, maybe a little more. But I ever try that sometime, actually, see if I can get a little bit of gain, because I have used actual in-band antennas that are considered 5/8. I think it's called 5/8 of a 3/4 that are actually made for the UHF band, but they're a little on the tall side. I like running something that's kind of unobtrusive. You don't see it very easily, and it's doesn't get knocked around, especially you go through a car wash. So, yeah, next time I try that with a signal generator, try it with some sort of calibrated device, like to put the signal in through air injection. I want to see if I can do something like that. I don't know, just testing it on a repeater at so many miles away and really come up with a valid type of test or not. K2RW with the TechNet, WHYY.
Very fine, Joe. And even if you do find out that your 2-meter antenna fed on 440 gives you an impedance that you're not so happy with, but gives you an antenna pattern that you are happy with, there's an extremely simple, like solution possible. And that's, again, in the series of articles that I told you about. When you Google the word Delta Loop, and you see a series of articles, I think at least one of them is by Peter, Papa Echo One, Mike Hotel Oscar. But that series of articles there, particularly when you look at the one called Vertical Vertical, which really is a kind of a J-pole-like antenna, and you look at that extremely simple-looking device, there's a quarter wave, not quarter wave, but it's a coaxial matching stub. Once you find out the impedance of the antenna you've got on the band you want to use it, but you don't like the impedance, correcting it, if you're smart enough, can be done with, in many cases, a dollar's worth of materials, and it could be... It looks like a T-connector with a piece of coax of exactly the right length going off to one side, and the piece of coax goes nowhere. It's either an open-circuited or a short-circuited on the far end, the opposite end from the T-connector, but that coaxial stub tuning device costs you very little and can perform some extremely nice magic of simultaneously matching the resistive component and the reactive component of the antenna at that frequency. Of course, it sounds like too much for too little. You do enough study of what a Smith chart is telling you when you do impedance matching on a transmission line, you would be amazed what kind of magic is possible. Let me drop now for a long enough period of time to make sure we pick up anyone else out of the area, and then we're going to go over to Bob next, but not yet. Wait for the breath through the beep. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, looks like there's no one else out of area that wanted to sign in. Bob, you're the next person on the list, W2ILP. Bob, you've got a lot of experience in a lot of areas, and so try to limit your comments and questions tonight to one particular subject at this time. And then later on, when things calm down a little bit, later on in that, we can come back to the quite a few other subjects you would like to discuss. So try to limit it to one, Bob. W2, Indio Lima Papa. K2RIW. You got it, Bob.
And the subject title is UHF antennas. In particular, from the point of view of engineering receiving antennas, targeting frequencies. And I've learned a discussion, if I'm allowed to continue. I will come to something that I'm surprised that you're involved with in terms of the
Bob, are you there?
Go on and come back.
Bob, are you hearing me right now, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you are extremely loud to me on my input, because you live in Comac and I live in Huntington. We're alongside of each other. to something not so pleasant going on with the propagation tonight. You're coming through the repeater. You've got the right TL, you've got the right signal output, you're on the right frequency, but you're only coming through the repeater about 20% of the time, and the signal is extremely noisy. So something is going on with where your antenna is aimed or what the propagation is like tonight between the COMAC and the repeater. I'm hearing you dead soul quieting on the input. Unfortunately, everyone else is almost not hearing you. I don't know if there's some kind of a change you can make in power output or aiming of the antenna, but right now you're not making it through the repeater. So I'm sorry to have to repeat that, report that to you, but I thought you ought to know before you proceed. I'm the only guy hearing you right now, so to speak. W2, India Lima Papa, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bob.
K2RIW, from other companies at request licensed to Emerson and get involved with all of this. In those days, they did a lot of work with Latin wires, and we had a Yagi antenna aimed straight up to the weather balloon, which was tuned by a slot that had an adjustment plastic slider on it. And what this did is give us a chance to work on the roof of the building, because we didn't have an antenna lab. And so I had a bit all about antennas. But I recalled my youth, starting at age of 8. I'll let it drop. And I was always going up to the flat roof of the apartment building which I lived in, and it was accessible, and there were these frames that were up there for holding clotheslines and antennas, and I had the long wire antennas up there for my crystal sets, my regenerative receiver, my super-head receiver, and all these things I was experimenting with. So naturally, I watched what was coming up on the roof. And prior to World War II, there was television that only a very, very few people had, because it was very expensive, and they only had the CRTs that were like 5 inches in diameter. And let me continue, the W2ILP continuing. And the first antennas on the roof were, believe it or not, straight dipoles, of course, horizontally polarized. And they were for channel 1, 2, or 3. After World War II, the channels that we know today started to be available. And we, of course, had all the channels that they have today that are irradiated. So the antennas that were first coming up and that were developed by RCA were full of the dipoles. And what they had was two dipoles, two folded dipoles, went for the higher TV channels, which of course was smaller, and went for the lower TV channels. And the television sets that were coming up were designed for 300 ohm impedance, and they had the flat living 300 lines that were very commonly used. The problem with these antennas was their requirement was much bigger than amateur radio, because they had to cover a much wider frequency. And they thought the only way they could do it at the time was to use folded dipoles and have a separate dipole for the higher and separate for the lower channels. Some of the sets were coming out later, and they were made by Dumont, and Andrea. And they used Mallory ware inductance tuners. They covered not only the TV